Most bankers aren't ready to help you until after their third cup of coffee. But with Central National Bank's after-hours service, you don't have to wait for the bank lobby to open to get help. You can contact us from 6 to 8:30 in the morning or from 5 to 10 in the evening, and we'll connect you to a real, live, local person who can answer questions and fix problems 7 days a week. Bank different. Bank Central. Central National Bank. Member FDIC.
This is a Rogue Media Network podcast. This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. How is your social battery right now? Are you drained, bursting with energy? It's at this level because maybe you don't have enough boundaries, less social in the winter. There can be many reasons. It can be easy to ignore our social battery and spread ourselves thin, especially with social gatherings picking up after the winter. What's the right amount of socializing for you? And how do you recharge? Maybe you thrive around people, or maybe you just need some more time alone. Therapy can give you the self-awareness to build a social life that doesn't drain your battery. Therapy is helpful for learning positive coping skills and how to set boundaries. It empowers you to be the best version of yourself, and it isn't just for those who've experienced major trauma. If you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online, designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. Just fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist and switch therapists anytime for no additional charge. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit betterhelp.com/365 today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/365.
This is 365 Sports, powered by Sikkim365.com.
He covers the Utah Jazz, but also the NBA, and also the Utah Jazz had a guy named Keontae George, who had a spectacular rookie year. And Tony joins us now on 365 Sports to start the hour. If you would have been able to have somebody, or you yourself would have mentioned the numbers that Keontae put up his rookie year, how many people would have like said, you don't know what the hell you're talking about?
So are we saying that we're surprised by what Keontae did? I'm not surprised.
No, we watched him. We know how explosive he is, but I don't know about how many people thought rookies make impacts in the NBA. He seemed to be built for better, being able to be better in the NBA than he was in college. How many others would have joined you in what you thought about him?
That's an interesting question, because I think the scouting reports were actually not really that kind to him. And I think that, you know, a lot of people, you know, saw what he did in Baylor, you know, saw some of the inefficiency, and, you know, and I think that, you know, that's one of the reasons why he lasted until the 16th pick. But, you know, if you watch Keontae through, you know, high school, through, you know, a lot of, the All-Star circuit stuff, you knew that, you know, once this guy got in the space, he was going to get better. You know, I think that he's one of those guys that was going to look better in the NBA than he did in college. And he didn't have the spacing in college that he did in the league. And, you know, his ability to make shots, his ability to get to, you know, pretty much any spot he wants to off the dribble, you know, once he started getting into the pick and roll game, and, you know, he started playing with, you know, other NBA players, you know, that commanded space and they commanded gravity. I think that you know, his game kind of the Keontae George that we kind of saw in high school, I think that's the Keontae George that we saw as a rookie in the NBA.
Tony, as a guy who's just 20 years old, I mean, I know there's lots of young guys in the NBA that come in to make impacts, but how did you feel like he sort of rolled in and grew up and kind of found his way into that locker room and found his fit within the team and leadership and things that were being asked of him?
So, I'll tell you a kind of a personal story. So my oldest daughter is 20 years old, and she's a sophomore at Morgan State University. And the first, you know, my first kind of exposure to Keontae a little bit was around summer league last year. And then, you know, the media availabilities, you know, once they started in October. And, you know, and I told him after one of, you know, our media sessions. I said, you know, you and my daughter are the same age, but you act a heck of a lot older than she does. And, you know, he just kind of really, like, he just kind of laughed and he said, yeah, I'm an old soul. And, you know, through the entire year, you know, that conversation stuck with me because that's how he acted. You know, he's a mature kid, but he was a kid that from the beginning, from, you know, very first possession of summer league, very first possession of being, you know, in the NBA and playing with veterans, he believed and he knew that he belonged. And it wasn't like a chip on his shoulder that he played with, but he played with, you know, a good kind of arrogance, mm-hmm. you know, that says, you know, I believe and I can play with you. And, you know, I asked him throughout the years, hey, is there anybody that you revere? Is there anybody that you're looking forward to? And he's like, nah, I just kind of want to go out and get after it. And it was just like that with him, you know, all season. And you can tell that the attitude that he had a gravitational pull. By March, by the end of the season, you know, he was one of the leaders in the locker room. You know, he's one of the most vocal guys in the locker room. He's one of the guys in the locker room that people rallied around. And, you know, like we're saying, we're talking about a 20-year-old guy. But this is what he has been all along, right? Like, he's been a guy that, you know, he made a splash at the high school level very, very early. By the time he's a senior in high school, he was one of the best prospects in the country. You know, he was, you know, one of the best players, you know, at Baylor during his freshman year. And then by the end of his rookie year, he was one of the guys on the team that everybody looked towards, you know, with the Jazz. But he also had, the thing that impressed me the most was that he also figured out a way to be deferential to his veterans. You know, he was deferential to Jordan Clarkson until he didn't have to be anymore. He was deferential to Colin Sexton until he didn't have to be anymore. So it was, you know, kind of like a rookie arrogance that I belong here, but also the self-awareness to know that there were guys that, you know, deserved and demanded touches, and that he had to work his way into the touches that he got by the end of the season.
You know, one of the things, Tony, that I thought when I watched him play, and he could be explosive, and yeah, there were some things, as you mentioned, that he had to do better, and how he would be maybe freer to do what he does best in the NBA, because it's a much more open game, not that there aren't a bunch of great athletes. He's a pretty thick kid. He's got a body that sometimes NBA rookies don't quite have until they maybe play a year or two.
The irony of that statement is that he had it in at Baylor, and he doesn't really have it anymore because he lost 30 pounds. And I think that that's what one of the things that really actually helped him. You know, so he played at about 220 at Baylor, I want to say. He's about 195 now. So, you know, he's a lot smaller, you know, body mass wise, but he's still thick. You know, you can still see the shoulders, like, and particularly in the legs as well. But he's so much more explosive off the dribble than he was at Baylor. You know, I think one of the things that hurt him at Baylor, well, there were two things I thought that hurt him at Baylor. Number one, obviously when you're playing with Flagler, you're going to have to play off the ball. So, you know, you're 6'3", you're playing off the ball, you're playing the two, sometimes you're playing the three because you're playing in a three-guard offense. So I think a lot of what he, you know, a lot of scouts and a lot of talent evaluators were saying, okay, this is a 6'3", two-guard who's 220 pounds. And the Jazz saw him as a point guard, which is why they, you know, prioritized him at number 16. But the weight at Baylor, you know, while it made him thick and while it made him strong and while it helped him once he got into the lane, I think it led to him taking a lot of contested jump shots. took a lot of contested threes, and he made a lot of them because he's a shot maker. But, you know, talent evaluators wondered, you know, how that would translate. So he lost the weight, and the shot making is obviously still there, but the quickness off the dribble is not there. And the ability to separate, the ability to get all the way to the basket. And I think, you know, when the Jazz drafted him, they drafted him with the envisioning him as a point guard. And, you know, that's what kind of came to fruition. And that's why we are where we are right now with him as, you know, Utah's, you know, unquestioned point guard of the future because, you know, he kind of took care of his body a little bit, kind of shored up some of the things that were question marks about his game. And the things that he did that were his strength, you know, he kind of doubled down on those.
Yeah, that's all very interesting stuff. It makes a lot of sense too. I mean, it makes sense the Jazz point of view. I mean, good call on their part. It's obviously working out very well, Tony. Team wise, I mean, there's a lot more out there for the Jazz. Obviously, finishing well below 500. While there is the optimism about Keyonte George, just sort of the feel about where they are, where they're going, and how all of it fits together.
Well, they were 26 and 26 through 52 games. And, you know, Danny Ainge and Justin Zanuck, they said, okay, you know, we can, you know, make a push at this. And, you know, maybe we make the play-in. Maybe we get out of the play-in. But, you know, we get clapped by, you know, Oklahoma City or Denver or whoever gets the number one seed. So, you know, they made the decision at the trade deadline to kind of tear it down. So they traded Kelly Olynyk. They traded Simone Fontecchio. They traded Ochai Agbaji. And, you know, they essentially sat Lauri Markkanen for the remainder of the season. They sat Jordan Clarkson for essentially the remainder of the season. And you know, they played the young guys. You know, so that led to them losing 24 out of 27 games. And, you know, now, you know, the Jazz have the eighth best lottery odds. And, you know, they have a really, really young core. And they have Lowry. So on some levels, they're in a weird spot. But on a lot of levels, they're in a really good spot because they have two first-round picks. They have a third pick that's going to be number 32. So, essentially, they have three first-round picks. They have a bunch of first-round picks in the future. You know, they've identified Keyonte George as a guy that should be a piece for them. And, you know, they have a bunch of future draft capital. So, you know, it was the right decision because this, you know, the Western Conference is really, really good. And, you know, maybe even next year, there's still probably 10 teams better than them in the Western Conference. But they're really set up for the future.
So let's discuss Kevin Young. I saw your reaction to BYU reacting very quickly to losing Mark Pope because of the domino effect of coaches from Kentucky, Arkansas, even Scott Drew holding court at Baylor. What do you know as far as other than what we've heard and the thought that BYU seems to have struck it rich here?
Yeah, you know, Kevin Young is a terrific coach. He was one of the rising stars, you know, in the assistant coaching community. And in my opinion, he was going to get an NBA head coaching job, you know, sooner or later, maybe sooner rather than later. So, you know, the fact that BYU could lure him from Phoenix, lure him to, you know, a traditional LDS university, you know, where we all know that there are kind of different rules in terms of recruiting and in terms of their admissions process and in terms of, you know, the life that they have to live. I thought that was a real coup for them, you know, so I think Kevin is going to be, you know, great for the program. My question is, you know, what's his transition from coaching the pro game to not only coaching the college game, but recruiting to the college game. You know, so it's going to be really interesting to see what his staff looks like and, you know, who's on his staff. In my opinion, I think he's got to get, you know, somebody who's, you know, really adept at recruiting. But, you know, for, you know, BYU to lose Mark Pope, like you said, because of the domino effect, which made it a really quick thing, you know, I thought that, you know, the rebound was nothing short of tremendous there. And, you know, I think that Kevin Young is going to be really a good thing for them.
Tony, the I know you're in Denver, right?
Yeah, okay. Right. I'm in Denver.
I saw your tweet about the turbulence, by the way. I thought that was I guess that was not that was being real, but the flight into Denver was pretty rocky, literally.
Well, so every flight into Denver is pretty rocky.
yeah, I guess so, right? Yeah.
So I kind of expect it at this point.
So with what the Mavericks, if you don't mind asking, I want to ask you about them. We're not a show that does a lot of NBA, but we got Keontae on and also with Kevin Young. But with how they closed the year and what they did to pick up those pieces that made them team defense very good and what Gafford and company, obviously Luka, Kyrie Irving, how much of a threat are they, not just to be a fun team to watch, but a team that could, in a very, very deep Western Conference, have success?
Oh, I think that they're a favorite to reach the Western Conference Finals. You know, they have two guys that, you know, those guys are, at very minimum, they're going to get 60 points a game between those two. And they could get 70 points, you know, in a great game, they can get 80 points. You know, both of those guys can give you 40. You know, to have that going into a playoff and to have two guys like that to where you can play perfect defense, you can do everything right defensively and they still make the shot, that, you know, that's demoralizing. And plus, you know, they have, you know, defenders around them. They have guys who can make shots around them. You know, Dante Exum has been a real X factor for them. Derek Lively has been a real godsend to them defensively. You know, P.J. Washington, mm-hmm. Daniel Gafford. I mean, the list goes on. They're deep. They're tough. They're long. They're athletic. They have two all-world offensive players. And they defend on the other end. It's going to be tough beating them four times for anybody, Denver included. So I think that it's going to be Denver and Dallas in the Western Conference Finals, and I think that series goes seven.
Tony, great to finally get you on. I have to admit this. There were times I reached out to you and I didn't get a response. I'm like, I don't know if I like this Tony Jones. And then I realized this is why I finally got a hold of you. The person who I had been sending the text messages to, thinking it was your number, finally told me, by the way, this is not Tony Jones. I got to share that with you. So I'm glad I finally got a hold of you.
Let me answer this. So I had the same phone number, the number that you texted to. It starts with 550.
Mm-hmm.
And I had that same phone number I've been living in Salt Lake for 16 years. I had that same phone number for about 13 or 16 years. In my transition to The Athletic, I tried to take that number with me because that number was attached to my Salt Lake Tribune phone. So I tried to take that number with me, but I could not take the number with me because that number was associated to a business line.
Oh, okay.
So I had to change the number. And obviously when you have the same number for 13 years, you have hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of contacts.
Absolutely.
So I try to let everybody know that I could, but I still get, you know, people that say, yeah, I've been trying to reach out to you. Do you not like me anymore? If you don't like me, just say so. Like, you never respond to our group chats and this and that. I'm like, you don't have the right number anymore. Bro, I'm so sorry. So I apologize
to
you.
No, it's not your fault, man.
I really do.
And
when you got the right number, how fast did I respond?
Oh, immediately. Like, absolutely okay. Immediately, and we had it done. I'll tell you a story, if you don't mind. This is back when phones, early, early, this is probably in the mid-90s. I once, during halftime of doing a junior college basketball game, raced up this tunnel, which was at a JUCO arena. Really nice one, though. And I went to go to the bathroom in a urinal. And I'm very attention deficit. And when I went to flush the urinal, my phone fell in it and went down. It's gone. And back then, a lot of those things weren't saved. And somebody said, well, what about the phone? I said, I don't give a damn about the phone. It's the contact numbers. Just like you said, right, man, you're petrified of losing all your sources and contacts and others. I'm glad it's worked out for you. Thrilled to get you on, man. Thanks for your time and enjoy the NBA playoffs.
No, thank you so much for having me. I really appreciate
Tony
it.
Tony Jones, The Athletic, with us on 365 Sports.
This has been a Rogue Media Network production.